ahead and try just to work it all out. But there's nothing you can go and do now, baby, with the benefit of my doubt. Time and time again, all things come to an end. But before I go, there's one thing you should know. You're gonna reap what you sow. Reap what you sow.
This is Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. R&B Boston native Jesse D has been described as a guitar-playing soul man and a modern-day trailblazer inspired by the old school. His great singing voice is complemented by his guitar riffs and a fantastic backing band. We are joined this time around by accomplished songwriter and musician Bonnie Hayes, who is currently the songwriting chair at Berklee College of Music. Once again, we'd like to thank iZotope for their hospitality and for the use of their space for this conversation. iZotope is an audio technology company that's obsessed with great sound. Their award-winning software products are used by musicians, music producers, and audio post engineers to enhance the sound of everything from today's top music tracks to major motion pictures and TV shows. iZotope's Audio Repair Suite RX even won an Emmy for engineering developments so significant that they fundamentally changed the way television is produced. As a matter of fact, if you're interested in joining the team, they are hiring. Check out their careers page to see open positions in marketing, finance, and engineering at iZotope.com. That is iZotope with a Z. So here is our conversation with Jesse D, recorded at iZotope in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Bonnie likes to curse. It's embarrassing. That's a joke.
I cursed a little bit. I mean, I spent 30 years on the road in buses with men, right. it's kind of hard not to.
That doesn't make you curse. I don't know.
It's a prerequisite. Exactly.
Do you live in the city?
Oh, yeah.
Bonnie?
Yeah. I don't have a car, as Chuck is aware.
You Ubered here?
I Uber everywhere. All right. I usually take the T, but it was, you know, one of those days.
You should get one of those little mopeds and moped around.
Dude, no.
No?
That's just a no.
I met Bonnie when she came out to Concord and she did a Q&A with Sarah Bareilles. And then after I met her, we said, well, you got to come on our podcast. And
I'm
then,
like the identified interviewer at Berklee. I get sent on all these missions to talk to famous people.
Yeah, she's good. That's why I'm a little intimidated right now.
Sounds like you do too good a job, so they keep asking you. You got to do a bad interview one of these
Except
times,
it's really fun to talk to Sarah Bareilles.
She's great. She's amazing.
She's charming and brilliant, and I really like her.
She's right. Yeah, you didn't want to stop.
There were so many things I wanted to ask her about.
But she's now the lead in Waitress now on Broadway.
Well, she wrote, yeah.
She took it over. She took over the lead, though.
Yeah, no, I knew that. Oh, okay. Yeah, because my best friend was in the band. I saw the ART here, so... One of my really good buds is in that band, so I know everything.
You do?
I know too much.
You can never know too much. All right, Jesse, thanks for coming, and Bonnie, thank you for coming too.
You're welcome.
Ron is.
Where's Ronnie?
I don't know. He's a doctor, and he used to save.
No way! I didn't know Ron was a doctor.
Ron's a doctor. Maybe his first name is Doctor. I'm not sure, but I think that. He works at the hospital and he's got a coat and everything, so
he's got a white coat.
That's what he's doing tonight.
Right on.
Jesse, actually I know your father.
That's right, you mentioned that.
Jack from the open mic out in Concord. I met him.
He's a regular at the
Main
Street
there.
Open mic.
He's a talented guy.
He is.
And then when I saw your name, and then I kind of heard it around, I'm like, I wonder if they're related. And he's like, yeah, that's my son. So he didn't know I was talking to you, though. He's like, oh, no, I have no idea. I haven't talked to him in a little bit. But you're from Arlington.
I am from Arlington, yes.
Yeah. And you've been here the whole time? Did you take off for school or?
I went to school. I studied at Mass College of Art.
All right, Mass College of Art.
Yeah, I've lived here my entire life. I've lived in the city at a point in my life, and now I live outside of the city.
You're back in Arlington?
No, I live in Medford, so not far from it. But
everyone seems to be kind of moving further and further out, depending upon the rents.
Medford's cool, though. There's a lot of musicians over there. It's still accessible to the city. It's near Somerville, which is where there's a lot of music.
Right. Yeah, it's near Cambridge and Somerville, which has kind of been a creative musical center for quite some time, for me anyway. Well, right. For more than just me.
All good. But a lot of the good clubs are.
Yeah. But yeah, I've lived in Medford for maybe around 12 years now.
Check out Porch Fest this weekend. Did you check it out? Have you been there?
We had commencement at Berkeley.
Oh, that was this weekend. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then
that's right.
I love Porch Fest. Yeah. I try to go when I can.
Yeah, it's fun. It's my first time going.
Did you go to all of it?
I went for like almost 3 hours today, and then I had to head home to Mother's Day stuff. But
I went to visit one porch to see some friends.
You didn't play yourself?
I didn't wander much. I didn't play, no. I have played in the past, and it's a wonderful thing. Every year, I feel like someone's going to get hit by a car on the street, and that'll be the end of it. And
I almost got hit a couple of times, so, just kind of like standing there, and a car goes flying by me.
Fingers crossed. I wish everybody the best. Yeah. Honestly. It's a wonderful event. It seems to be catching on in other
cities
and other, but it's a great communal thing. Neighbors that might not usually enjoy the sound of music.
I was wondering about that because some of those bands are pretty loud.
Houses, people kind of start coming out of their caves and actually talking to each other and stuff like that.
So your last album came out in 2013.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you doing right now? Are you just touring right now? Are you in the studio?
Yeah, I am. I guess working my way towards the studio, refining material and songs to get in there and make the most of the cost of a studio to not go in there. I would love to have a studio to just waste time in all day. Not waste time, but spend time in and just mess around in. But that's not really the reality of it. So I do a lot of demoing of stuff at home.
What do you use? Pro Tools?
I'm just been using GarageBand. Doesn't need to be anything fancy for me.
You don't need to edit.
Get the ideas out. Well, you can do general editing.
Yeah, I guess you can. But, you have a band, yeah.
I have a band, yeah. So I came up playing by myself as a solo act, and the band has certainly grown over the years.
You have a horn section in your band?
Yeah.
I've never seen you, I'm sorry.
There's a horn section. Yeah, I'm lucky to play with lots of great players that take my songs and ideas to levels that I could not get them to. I guess they kind of both make you appreciate the other. In my experience, playing with a large band, a large group of people on stage, there's a certain freedom to performing by yourself after that. You can react to an audience or an environment in real time, stop. You can repeat things without making sure that everybody else is with you playing the same thing. But it's also very much more naked in that sense that you're kind of out there in the open.
So do you record with your band?
I do. The two albums I have made have been with the general.
They're a great sounding band.
They
are.
The
records sound great.
They are.
I love the horns.
I love the horns, but I love the rhythm section. It sounds pretty on point rhythmically. R&B based. It reminds me a lot of like the Sam Cooke stuff.
Oh, cool.
Your voice sounds good. It's got a little bit of that old school like analog tape sound going. You know?
Yeah, all the records we made are all tapes. So that's.
Oh, is that right? That's why. So I'm actually hearing good analog tape sound, not pretend analog tape sound.
That was all analog. Really?
Yes.
That's awesome.
That's great that you record to tape. You got to kind of stick with. You take a couple takes. You pick the best one. You just go with it.
I think great art, if not music, is created within parameters.
Yeah, I agree.
When you have restrictions. In this day and age, you can have infinite amount of tracks, and you can always just...
It just makes you go on forever and do terrible
and
things.
It makes you commit. It makes you commit to ideas.
Yeah. You know, Kevin Agudas, who did the Lumineers record, really believes that. He likes the 16-track, this is what you got, right? Make decisions while you're going. And I think that's a really powerful way to make records right now.
And I think that...
That's great that you do it that way.
I think that there's a lot of... when people talk about older records having a magic to them that people are trying to capture or attain. maintain. I think that some of that so-called magic, all musicians aside, comes a little bit from that. Everybody playing in the same room together.
And you sing at the same time, or do you overdub your vocals?
What I've done usually is play live with the band so that they get the energy of me playing in the studio and can react to it. And then I'll go back in and recut the vocal. I guess I've done it both ways, yeah. Depending on the song.
How easy it is to sing and get
right,
a great take
right,
on
how,
it.
Right, yeah. How capable I am of,
yeah, yeah.
Of,
feeling that.
Of getting it. But yeah, I love to. I have just tracked the vocal live with the band before, and I enjoy that too.
That's awesome that you do that. So when you write, do you think about the band, or do you just write the song and then you let the band kind of build the parts and everything, or how does that balance?
Yeah, I think in some ways I try to be tuned into the song itself and let the song dictate what sort of arrangement or what sort of dynamic it should have. General arranging ideas or even counter melodies or parts that, you know, I'll pitch to people or give to people, and other stuff gets arranged on the fly. The horns, for example, have all been arranged by a trumpet player I work with named Scott Aruda.
I guess it depends on the song.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot of the song material is better realized, in my opinion, with the band and with the horns here and there.
Well, I mean,
depending on the song.
But I've heard you play just you and your guitar, and you totally fill the space with your voice and the way you're playing the guitar, and you get your riffs in there. So
right, and I think you have to approach it as two different things.
Yeah,
which I try to do. I'm not saying I can't do that. I'm saying for my taste, the material functions better with a fuller sound and larger arrangements.
Now, when you went on tour in Europe, was that after 2013, after your last album?
I probably had done most of my touring over there prior to that.
Was that with the full band, or was that by yourself?
Both. I've done a lot of both.
You took the band to Europe. That's awesome.
Yep.
I bet they were happy.
The band or the Europeans?
Both. Europeans I mean, they're a little bit. It's funny how narrow some. I mean, although your music is so fun to listen to, that I can't imagine you going into a club and not having it go over great, just because a lot of it is this kind of bright, positive, happy sound, you know, and danceable and up tempo. So it's not like you're doing any big dramatic boohoo music. I think Europeans tend to have a way broader appreciation of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my question. I mean, do they seem to have a more
eclectic, in advance.
No, but it's like eclectic, that rhythm and blues that you do. Do you find it more accepted over there than over here?
Yeah, I would say that Europeans in general might have a more refined taste for R&B music.
Yeah, they don't go, oh, this is old stuff. Like a lot of Americans sort of do this, well, it's like a retro vibe or something. They take it as genuine and real and really are able to enjoy it without putting it in a historical, I don't know, it just feels really different. They're really open and they really just enjoy it.
That's interesting, because that's like when you read stuff about you, that's generally what happens over here, is that they compare you to, oh, well, you know, they even mention like who you've opened up for and what you grew up listening to, and so it puts into context for us Americans over here. And I suppose over there it's just a different way of viewing this.
I'm not saying Americans don't have a refined taste for
it's just
this
a different
stuff.
Refined taste.
But as a whole, it's very apparent and noticeable the degree at which Europe has embraced rhythm and blues music. I think that different people listen to music different ways. Some people need to categorize music when they hear it. Some people are, you know, automatically are very quick, like, I like your music, it makes me think of this, or you sound like so-and-so. To some extent, I think that can help some people, kind of talking points, key stops along the way for them to categorize when they hear it, and some people can just listen to it and enjoy music and not have to necessarily process it in that.
Yeah, I bet people actually say, yeah, you know, I really like him, but I can't place, where does he belong in my mind of rock and this and Motown and... Yeah,
and
like, where does he belong?
Kind of like, do I like Motown?
I know.
Oh, I don't really like Motown. You know, there's these sort of weird, like, boxes. I know this a lot with young people where they go, I don't really listen to that kind of music. Like, they'll hear a electric guitar and they'll be like, I don't really like that kind of music. And I'm like, how do you know you didn't even listen to it? But okay.
We just had this conversation. We had this woman, Ashley Jordan. She's a country star here, and she's from Harvard, Massachusetts, which, you know, it's not really...
Not
really our export there. Yeah. And but she was like, people would come up to her. She was like, no, I don't like country music, but I really like you.
Yeah.
And yeah. She's then like, you like she gets it all the time. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, I guess it's something, it's just human nature to kind of categorize things that way.
To make I usually try to just say thank you, no matter
what. Yeah, exactly.
At least they like you.
The way to go, yeah.
You know, at least it's not like, you know, I don't like rhythm and blues, and I don't like you. So at least I don't say that, right? Not out loud.
Well, enter the internet, people.
Oh, God. Oh. Just ignore it.
People can...
what about Boston? I mean, Boston historically is, you know, especially back in the 70s, it was like very rock-oriented city.
Right.
And now, not so much. I mean, when I'm going out and I say, there's so many different genres playing out there. And actually, didn't you just play recently at the Sinclair?
Yeah, we were there last couple months back.
Yeah, a couple months back, right? Yeah, I meant to go see you there. And I've seen like a whole bunch of different acts there. So I think, I don't know, do you feel like, I mean, since you grew up here and you've been here for now, I don't know how many years now, but do you find that the labeling of Boston as a certain type of music city has changed since growing up here?
I can't say I've ever really paid attention to a general label for the city. People have mixed feelings about Boston as a music city. In my experience, it's been really wonderful. And I feel like the more cities I've gone to outside of Boston, the more you appreciate what Boston is and all that it has to offer. You know, Boston doesn't have the bands that New York or Nashville or right. something like that has. But those in my experiences, you know, there's always exceptions. But from what I've been able to tell is that those are places to showcase your music and not necessarily nurture it. Whether it's the size of Boston, that it's so small, that there's a familiar aspect to it. Like people are supporting each other and want to see each other succeed. It's not necessarily a competition. You know, I think you can find pockets of that stuff in New York or Nashville. There's little brewing scenes here and there, but it's not the way that I've been able to experience this area. And that's just my experience. You know, some people will tell you that Boston music scene is completely divided. You know, nobody from this side of the river ever goes to the other side of the river to see a show and vice versa, which is an interesting phenomenon all in and of itself.
I hear really differing reports from people about the vibe. If you go to the Lizard Lounge or whatever, there's a feeling of community and connection. Anytime that you have a club where, or like Passim, you know, where there's like a cradle, you know, where people can really meet and listen to music together, that's what creates scenes.
It fosters the community.
Yeah, but people are in different. Some people who don't have a place like that or haven't really associated themselves with a place can feel fractured. But I think that's true in any music city. You know, people have really different perceptions based on how it's going for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it depends on what you're looking to get out of the scene.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And,
do you just want people to come to your show or do you want, you know, do you want community?
I guess an example of that is if you're playing at your average New York club and there's four or five bands on the bill, that a lot of times the band will play and then they pack up their stuff, they're gone. Whereas I think that in my experience anyway, there's been a more supportive communal vibe of supporting the community in Boston.
Y'all still at home doing your day-to-day. Well, I'm on my own and you're all alone. Too many miles away. Through rivers and roads, cities and towns, countries and continents. But despite what it seems, the space in between us is insignificant. Oh, just like our feet, well, they touch on the ground. Just like gravity. You can take my word, rest assured, you'll be on my mind and in my heart. On my mind, in my heart. The days in a week, the weeks in a month, and the months that turn into years. Oh, they all fly by in a blink of an eye, but they never really disappear. But we're not defined by the passing of time and all of its urgency. Well, we're bound by our love, our bones and our blood, our minds and our memories. Yeah, just like the stars up in the sky, just like the fish in the sea.
take my word. Rest assured, you'll be on my mind and in my heart. On my mind and in my heart.
You didn't start playing the guitar until you were 18, from what I
read. Yeah, I probably picked it up around 17, 18.
For a guitarist, I mean, certainly some guitarists can start that late, but a lot of musicians will start as kids. They'll start playing as a young guy.
Yeah.
Did you have any instruments at all before you got to that age?
Guitar was always
in the house,
prevalent in my life.
Because your dad?
Growing up, my father played guitar. I picked up a guitar and made noise on it, but I think that was the time when I first started to... make my fingers go into chord positions.
Did you take lessons?
I didn't, and I think that can be a blessing at times.
Yeah.
And,
singing a curse.
And it can be a curse sometimes. And I think ultimately I try not to let the curse part of it stop me from songwriting, from what I do. And try to make your weakness your strength type of
It is defining for, I think, for us, you know, what you're, it's, I wouldn't even call it a weakness.
Yeah, I guess we're back to that limitation.
That limitation thing, yeah. Which is, if you have a limited voice, it's more idiosyncratic. It's easier to tell it's you, you know, than if you can do anything.
It's recognizable.
Yeah, recognizable. Like, that's the nice word for it. Were you singing before that?
I was. I've been singing from a young age. I grew up. I guess singing in church, and I did musical theater in grade school.
Oh, you did?
Sang in a couple of different choirs.
When did you find your voice, like, as far as... I feel like my voice has changed. The way I sing has changed even from the last 5 years. And yours is a very unique voice. You can really hit those high notes. You've got that... I don't know if it's a falsetto. It's really just kind of that range up there.
High tenor is
great. Yeah. Really great. And very, very different from, you know, a lot of other voices that you can hear out there. So when did you start finding that voice?
I don't know. Do you remember? I feel like I'm still trying to find it a lot of the time. I think probably towards the beginning of college, when I was early 20s, I think it started to take shape a little bit more definitively.
What was the name of the band that you were in before? Wasn't it like a funk band? Desafunk?
I sang in a band when I first got into college. I was doing a very limited amount of the writing. I'd write a song here and there, but I was a vocalist in the band.
So from doing that kind of music to the R&B that you kind of morphed into, was that a different vocal kind of range for you? Did you change it based upon what you were playing? The only reason I ask is
I mean, the range will change based on what we're playing. I think that added to informing the sound of my voice. I think things become more refined and ideally improve the more you do something. You figure out what you like, what you don't like, what works, what you have no business attempting to do again.
So true.
Try
everything
once.
It's
knowing your limitations.
Maybe twice.
Once you hit that ceiling, you know not to try and hit it again.
You're such an assured singer, so confident. I mean, did you play like a million gigs? Or
I don't know if I played a million.
But a lot. Gig a lot, so you've been gigging a lot for a while. It's a gig voice. It's a person who's used to being, you know, having to get it right in the moment, find a way to enter that feeling of the song and really be in that moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, especially if it's just you and the guitar.
That's an interesting difference between American audiences and European audiences. In my experience, is that American audiences, you come up trying to fight or win over somebody's attention in a bar. Whether they're there to get drunk or they're there to see music at all to begin with, you're almost fighting for that attention and battling to hold that attention if you can get it. Whereas experiences I've had in Europe, if you go from an audience like that over there and it's a theater full of people standing at attention, dead silent, there to hear the music, it's a little bit unnerving to a point, but amazing.
It's not a
at
party.
The same time.
I mean, clubs are like a party atmosphere.
They're there for the music.
And
they're
there's
not
other
there
people,
to...
you're talking, maybe, you know, you're dancing. I mean, there's just this kind of distraction element that I don't think is as present in Europe, I agree. And it makes you put your songs high, and it makes you have a fast tempo.
Play them too fast.
And it makes you have a horn sound, because you want it to be like, wow, you know, this is a big sound, because it really makes it so people can't pay attention to anything but you. I feel that strongly. That is an more American thing.
So you stayed in Boston. Was there ever a time you were going to move out move out of here and not just go on tour, but just, I mean, there are some people I know who have left and like, you know, they're fine having left.
I considered moving to Chicago at one point just because I liked the city. I realized that it wasn't a sensible thing to do for a touring musician in that you have to drive 4 hours in every direction to hit another city, whereas here you can drive half an hour and hit another million people.
The Eastern Seaboard's the best touring area in the country. City after city where there are these unique audiences.
Yeah, and like I said, I've seen a lot of this beautiful country we live in, and the more I've traveled, the more I've appreciated where I grew up, where we live now.
So you never left. You've been here the whole time.
Yeah,
I love to hear that. I really do, especially with all the with all the Berklee students coming here. You hope they just don't. You hope they don't leave and go to New York. You hope they stay.
A lot of them do stay if they've been lucky enough to have found a community or put together a band.
What do you find your students are doing when they're...
Well, they're so oriented. After you go to college and pay that kind of money to get a college education, to be a professional musician or producer or songwriter, there's such a focus on having a career in the music business, and then...
From an industry standpoint.
Yeah, and for them, the sheer amount of time and money that they've put into it, and their parents, you know, everybody's saying, well, you need to go somewhere where you can make a living. And I think the only real way, it's hard to make a living out of Boston unless you're gonna tour like that. You know, you have to be a great live performer. You can't be a studio rat. It takes a certain skill set to be able to be successful in this kind of career. And so if the student is able to do that, then they may be more likely to stay because they can see a path. Hmm. I can release independent records. I might get signed to a little label. I can tour. I can make a record every couple of years. And I can sell merch and CDs at my gigs. And I can make enough to play exactly the kind of music that I want to make and find my audience. But that takes a bunch of certain, you have to be good socially, you have to be able to get on a schedule for your releases, write on a schedule, you can't, you know, all that stuff. And a lot of the kids are producers, or they only write songs, they're not really great singers or not really great performers or whatever it is. They don't have an instrumental skill. So the fact that you can sing great, that you can play the guitar great, that you have a band, that you're from here and you've been here and you grew this career, that you have a community that you can rely on, those are real factors, you know.
Absolutely.
For your ability to kind of make a life.
And if I were to get up and move to Brooklyn or move to New York, that is a creative epicenter for music, I would live in a smaller space and I would have to find ways of generating income other than music more than I have to do now.
Couldn't rehearse as easily. Yeah, your guys wouldn't be around.
The cost of living is...
Three times.
Yeah. That's the reality of it in my mind. But
do you find that as you're writing and as you continue to write... Have you ever written a song? It's like, well, you know, this isn't really a rhythm and blues song. This is really something that's more rock, or this is something that's more. Have you ever thought to yourself, you know what? I want to reinvent what I'm doing and do something different.
Yeah, to the extent that I listen to all kinds of music. Mm-hmm. I don't just listen to R&B soul music. And ideally, music that I make needs to hold my interest. Mm-hmm. It needs to do something for me. And so I think there's a sense of constantly wanting to vary aspects of it so that it's interesting to me. I think the idea of reinventing your sound or yourself has more to do in some ways with that whole categorization thing, the way that people are perceiving it. If I'm going to go about to try to make an album, a collection of songs, they have to be coherent to some degree in my mind. So I have lots of songs that never been released anywhere. It's kind of more about the right grouping of songs in the context of an album, I guess.
You still make physical product, right?
Like I do, yes. Yeah.
You have vinyl.
Don't ask me why, but yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
But you sell them, I'm sure, at shows.
I try to, that's for sure.
How sometimes do you do? You do all right? Yeah. I'm sure you do.
Yeah, it depends on...
I like having the object. Maybe I think people, I'm old fashioned.
People still absolutely still buy CDs in this case.
And you did come out with vinyl on the last one, right? Yeah. Yep. So
you sell those?
I do. Yeah.
You do good, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. So you're really into the physical object. I mean, I totally am on your side here.
I mean, probably there's a whole lot of them sitting in boxes.
I know.
My house.
I know.
You too.
We're about to put out our album, and we're like, how many do you want to make? I'm like, I don't know, how much room do I have in my house to store the ones that don't sell? But I love that you did it. You put out vinyl. I think that's what I'll buy. If it's a CD or vinyl, I'll buy vinyl. Not many people have a record player anymore, but if you do, yeah.
I mean, like back. I said, it was all tracked to 1-inch analog tape machine. The medium of vinyl is kind of its ideal format to actually listen to it in. So
I think Lou was in town last week because we gave her an honorary Lucinda Williams.
Yeah.
And yeah, I saw the picture. They have a vinyl of Ghosts of Highway 20. And I got to say, I love vinyl. I grew up with that. I have a particularly resonant relationship with vinyl from
there's nostalgia wrapped in.
But for me, I don't think it would matter that much to me personally or musically to put something on vinyl.
It's certainly a more expensive thing to do, right? I mean,
you have to design it differently too.
Yeah. I mean, it's you got to hope that you sell them. It's going to be more expensive for the person buying them too. I mean, they're at least $20 to start. And, you know, I'm all for the choice, but it's certainly a strong choice.
Something
to make.
To try to be smart about.
Are you going
to
do any major tours? Are you hitting any festivals this summer coming up or anything like that?
I have like kind of sporadic regional type festivals. Nothing major. My focus is mostly on new music at the moment and making another record. And
you're going to do it this summer?
I would like to do it this summer. We'll see if it gets to if it happens. Together.
Do you write a lot of songs for a record, or I'm kind of curious about your process?
Not as much as I would like to write.
You wish
write,
you had a larger
a record. And I think that's always the case. I wish I had more time to write than I do, and a lot of it is about making time to write. You know,
do you co-write at all, or do you only
now and then? I enjoy the premise of it, the idea. It obviously has everything to do with who the other,
of course,
co-writer is. You know,
it's so intimate; it's kind of terrifying.
I like the idea of that. I've done some writing for other people. Sometimes a co-writing scenario can lend itself to writing songs for other people, which is
it just also makes you write more songs. Like if you, one of the ways that the kids at school do it is I say schedule more sessions where you have to write,
right?
And it kind of just keeps you in that flow mode. So right. I was just curious if you, that's almost a
not,
tool to
not
get
not
more
nearly
songs.
As much as I would like to, or as much as I some could argue that I should.
And you have a clear sound, you know, it's very distinct and identifiable, and I think that's probably partly because
I don't do that.
You write alone a lot. Yeah. And you can stick to your zone, you know.
Well, you could say that co-writing from that perspective would be a good way to maintain that identity while expanding it or changing it.
Right.
Have you not maybe co-written with somebody, but have you gone on one of their albums and sung, done some like guest playing or guest singing on anybody else's album?
I guess I haven't, you know, stuff here and there, kind of cameo appearances. Yeah. There's a, I have to sing on a record by a band called Lake Street Dive.
I love them.
Or now.
They're so good.
Much more well-known than when I was on their record.
Oh, cool.
They're really popular at the kids at Berkeley.
They are. The kids love them.
All right. Well, we'd love to have you play a couple songs. Are you interested in doing that?
I'd be happy to.
This is a song off of the last record I made. It's called What's a Boy Like Me to Do? If only you knew what this would do to me. Maybe, just maybe, you might have done differently. I would have never expected you ever neglect to be anything but faithful and true. Oh, but I guess I was wrong. What's a boy like me to do? Can't bring myself to leave you. I can't really trust you either. I'm feeling so confused. And even though I still love you, I'm not really sure that I want to. Between two choices now, I just can't seem to choose. I thought that we'd be, we would be for eternity. But sometimes, 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 something on what they seem to be. I know I need to begin to either stop or continue losing my own mind over you. What's a boy like me to do? What's a boy like me to do?
Who did you listen to growing up? All that stuff everybody always asks you.
The main explanation would be when I was growing up, I grew up in a religious household, and at some point my parents, I was not allowed to listen to secular music, but they would let me listen to WODS, the oldies station. Probably when I was 8 or 9 or so, I would wake up in the morning, go to bed at night listening to the oldies station. So back then it was actually, if you listen to an oldies station now, it's more...
Yeah,
more
from the 80s.
Disco or classic rock. It's like a classic rock station. But yeah, there was more Motown and doo-wop and 50s. Pop stuff.
It's really evident.
That's obviously an evident.
But the guitar playing style, I mean, it's so specific. You know, it's linear playing that's rhythmic, and it has a little bit of improvisation. You know, I was just thinking. So, like, did you listen to guitar? I mean, were you listening to guitar players with that ear, or did it just go in there?
Not then. Absolutely not. I mean, nowadays I'm certainly listening more to guitar harder, players.
Yeah, you're quite a good guitar player.
Thank you very
much. It's really a pleasure.
Try another one?
Yeah.
This one's called The Only Remedy.
Learned my lesson. I never really knew just just what I was missing. I used to think that life wasn't even worth living. I kept on giving up all the time, till the day you came along and you proved me wrong. You turned my backward world around, so I knew then what I know now.
Beautiful. It's amazing.
I really love Jesse's voice and energy, and I want to thank him for talking to us, and also thanks to Bonnie Hayes for her conversational expertise, if that's even a thing. You can purchase Jesse's music and see where he is playing next at jessed.com. Go to our website at abovethebasement.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Bonnie, Ronnie, and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique. Gaining Ground grows organic produce for hunger relief with help from an army of volunteers, and they give it away to people who need it for free. Throughout the harvest season, produce from Gaining Ground's farm goes to food pantries, meal programs, and shelters in Greater Boston and Eastern Massachusetts. Their approach is local and sustainable, and most of their produce is distributed within 20 miles of the farm and within 24 hours of harvest. To learn how to support Gaining Ground and for more information, please visit gainingground.org.